The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, and I forgot what I wrote next. Abuse, dolls, naked dolls, no sex dolls. So the viewer's discretion is kind of advised. And this is the last episode of season one. I tweeted end of an era and I was hoping 4 or 5 newspaper articles would like pick it up and like make a fuss about it, but that did not happen. Hello, I'm your host, Kai, the 11th old half celestial, who hosts the beautiful, amazing podcast called In the Memory of the Coldfish, which is a weekly podcast so far, and I'm so sorry for uploading this so late. Like, it's a Sunday and my dog is sleeping in front of me today after a while instead of my cat. And he's not really sleeping because he's opening his mouth and licking his nose. That's like improvement. But anyway, so today on this episode, we are gonna talk about Annabelle. I was so not expecting myself to say it like that. I was gonna say Annabelle. But yeah, okay. So we're gonna talk about her, the beautiful, amazing person. And before we jump on to Annabelle, let's jump fish for fishy news. And my dog is like, because he's already, I think, sick of me speaking. So yeah. Okay, something fell. Wow. So the first news on fishy news is that the tree, a fruiting tree, a tree which was impregnated and was creating millions and billions of children, fell. Yes, a branch, not the entire tree, like a main branch of the tree fell. And voila, that is a part of my life now. And I'm going to live with that scar for all my life. And off to the actual real fishy news of and from the world. The first headline reads, "Mom horrified after discovering terrifying headless photos in walls of new house." Well, I would be more terrified if she wasn't terrified of finding them. Like, I mean, who wouldn't be terrified after discovering headless photos on the wall of a new house? It further says, a woman who moved into a new house was freaked out after she discovered a hidden room, but what she found within the walls was creepier. Cam Me, that's a name, documents the process on TikTok, where concerned viewers warned her that previous owners probably boarded up the room for a reason. First of all, like, I love the reporting in this article. I mean, the way that they said, like, but what she found in the house was way creepier. Like, yeah, interesting. And concerned viewers was even always more fun. And the fact that the previous owner would have done it for some reasons. I mean, duh, why else would you, like, plaster off a room? Isn't it a little obvious? Like, they had a reason. They put people they murdered in a room that they hide. I mean, I won't murder somebody most probably. I'll get murdered. There's like a highly likely chance of that. Ooh, I just realized I'm wearing 3 necklaces, a pink one, a white one, and a silver one. Anyway, you obviously, what? Yes. So yeah, I wouldn't murder people, but if I do, I'm a host of a true crime podcast. She also says in the article, she also read out a cryptic note written on the back of the picture saying, "Remember this creepy one. I do not know if this is a bleed or what it is, but take a look at the back. How to eliminate that annoying glare when one wears sunglasses." And I'm like, this is a chick that my producer hates. Wears glasses. Son of a bitch is smiling right now. Anyway, one other person in the article also said, "What is it with Americans and secret rooms?" Well, you do not know anything about the White House yet. Google about it, because Google is your best friend, because your best friend is most probably sleeping with your significant other. Moving on to the next news, it says, Noah's Ark impounded in Ipswich for not having paperwork to say it's seaworthy. Seaworthy. Without the paperwork. You can't be seaworthy. I mean, if a car does not have paper, it's not roadworthy anymore. This kind of ship is racism. Shipism. No, paperism. yeah, it's a bad joke. Like, all immigrants who don't have enough papers get subjected to paperism. But I'm not going to talk about this news any further because it gets very, actual life fishy. Moving on. UK neighbor, wow, cuts tree in half over bird poop dispute. We are absolutely distraught. Fun fact, the tree which just fell down, it is also, like, kind of cut in half. So, yay me. Bird poop dispute. Well, okay, so, yes, like, guys, visit India someday. Actually, don't. But, yeah, I mean, do, but just don't get into bird poop or any disputes of any sort. Just, like, FYI. So, the article says, when words fail, sometimes you just have to cut down half a tree, at least. That's what one couple did. I believe this is Fox News because hate their reporting, hate what they stand for. But they are like sarcastic and yeah. So their reporters are doing one good job at least. And why the fuck did they cut the tree? It does not make sense. Will you burn somebody's house if they poop on your head? You won't. I think you won't. But even if you do, anyway, you should, because that way I'll be able to cover you in the podcast, be like, oh my God, this stupid person died because he pooped on somebody's head and got burned alive. Yeah, not funny anymore. Last weekend, in the thing, in the article, it said, he said he was going to see a tree surgeon to cut it down, and we asked him not to, but they came on Friday and did it, Misty added. They came on Friday and did it, lol, nice. Says title of your sextape. And what the fuck is a tree surgeon? I want to be that. The rest of the article is, well, boring. It talks about boring things. Talking about more boring things, here's an ad break. Okay, I hope that you enjoyed that. And today on Out of the Blue, we have something pretty amazing. So I think you guys know that I'm an artist, right? So today on Out of the Blue, we are going to talk about an artist who allegedly, like artists actually, who allegedly burned down houses with their artwork. So there's more than one similarity between us. A, he liked crying boys. I was a crying boy. And in 1950s, he painted a series of over 60 portraits. And a lot of legends say it's Italian artist Giovanni Bargoloni, though it's not that, and I butchered the pronunciation. It's actually a Spanish artist. But anyway, who expects white people to actually care about ethnicities and like have right research on anything? But so he used to paint a teary-eyed, kind of impoverished-looking child. And he had other names too, Bruno Amadio and Francio Civile. So he used either of these three names and I go with Koi. And I was like, I need 9 more names, one for each. So like my real name, Koi name, and like 700 other names. So yeah, anyway, he painted his things in 1950 and till 1985, September 4th. Everything was fine and all right. But what happened? I sometimes want to do a serious voice. And then I'm like, yeah, that's just not me. So yeah, back to 4th September 1985, a British newspaper tabloid called The Sun, from where a lot of our fishy news are from, published a story about a couple, Ron and May Hall, whose house was burned down due to a fire which started in a chip pan. The painting of a crying boy remained untouched while all around it were charred ruins. The couple blamed the fire on the painting because the painting was obviously haunted. So one of the articles even went ahead to say that there was a fire station officer called Alan Winkinsaw, and he said that he saw numerous, and I quote, numerous other cases wherein the same painting or a similar painting of a crying boy was the only object in the house which would have survived a fire unscathed. After the article got like more calls, there was somebody called Dora Mann and said her house burned down just 6 months after she bought the painting. She said that all her paintings were destroyed except one crying boy. Like, there were a lot of people who said this, and one of my favorite one was a reader said her son caught his private parts on a hook just after she bought the crying boy. And I was like, yeah, okay, like your child catching their private parts on a hook is not the fault of a painting. Seriously, get a life. So there was also a third one who, like, this is kind of sad, but still, that her husband and three sons died after she bought the painting in 1959. And I was like, yeah, 1959 to 1985, that's like 15 years and people do die in 15 years. But okay, what do I know? And then there was another house who displayed another crying boy, which was painted actually by a different artist called Anna Zinkasen. And her house also burned down. The panic kept on growing. A lot of people were simply throwing away them. Some people were actually not throwing away them. Some people got them because there was rumors that if you throw them away, they might come back to haunt you. So I read this like thing which said that we hung the painting out on a barn shed and always ready with fire extinguishers in case everything around it decided to burn. But yeah, it's fun. It's very fun. And one other house, as I was talking about, who displayed crying boy painted by another artist, most probably inspired by the initial artwork. So it had a story that a fire brigade spokesperson claimed that there was no... Okay, so basically another artist, Anna Zinkasen's crying boy was also haunted, and that's it, that's the end of it. I did not put an enter or like another point, so I was like, it was a continuation of the story, but it was not. So another story came out and a fire brigade spokesperson came and they said, there's no reason for alarm, but adding, these incidents in very similarity are being very frequent. And I was like, yeah, it's like saying the pandemic virus isn't fatal, but people are dying of it. So just stay indoors and just don't be stupid. But what do I know? I'm just a child. So soon, the Sun paper, which like published the news initially, had stacked over 2,500 prints of the crying boy with different artists. And they burned it in a gigantic bonfire. And I was like, okay, interesting. And this was supposed to be a ritual to get rid of the haunting and like the curse from the whole thing. But the rumors about the painting refused to die. Another story later on spread that the crying boy was a Spanish street urchin called Don Bonillo. Yes, Don Bonillo. And I don't think Don Bonillo is a Spanish name per se, but I don't know. And like using Don, but it is also a street child. So anyway, so his parents died in fire. This child's parents died in fire and no one wanted to take him in because wherever he stayed, the fires would start. When the artist painted him and the artist's studio itself was also destroyed by fire. Years later, an unidentified body was found inside a charred ruins of a car, and the name on the driver license was Don Bonino. And I'm like, homeless? I mean, yes, congratulations for you having like a lot of... I'm just skeptical about this entire thing because yes, it's fun, but they have done so many fallacies in terms of facts, names and everything basic that I'm like, yeah, but... It was fun to talk about it because I'm like, yeah, whosoever buys my painting, their house will not burn down. It will be filled with riches so they can buy more paintings of mine. Anyway, in 2010, a BBC radio presenter, Steve Punt, attempted to burn the crying boy painting, but the flames wouldn't spread. And he concluded on his show, which he also put on YouTube, that the painting was covered in some kind of fire retardant coating. And I was like, yeah, scientist, comedian person, you know everything about the whole thing. So, but we do not know if it was actually like proven or not. So, yeah, that's it about this. And it was a fun, like, I wanted to do an entire episode on it, but there's not enough credible research on it. It's like, okay, my house died. Okay, my house also burned down. And just like, yes, last week we covered a burning house. I was like, yeah, let's not burn more houses and children in it. Anyway, so let's get to the haunted part of the episode, but well, the whole of episode is haunted. So the story today is called Thingy, like something dangling back on my throat. Thingy? I just want to sound sexy like Nicki Minaj, I'm sorry. Okay, so to Thingy, the date that I've given it is 12 September 2017. Like, it's very uneventful, the date and the time and everything. And the time is 8:11 in the morning. So let's just get into this. Let me tell you, my imagination for this is like, it's gonna be a cute Disney movie animation, okay? But it's, since it's written by me, it's not gonna be cute. But yeah, you get the idea, right? So yeah, the trees I keep on crossing by me as I sit and wander and not wander. The luggage in the back keeps on shaking, aching, as if it wants to get out before it reaches its ultimate hill. Now, the taxi that I'm in smells like cinnamon, like the entire town. I do not know where this appetizing nature comes out from, but whatever it is, I love it. Or do I? It's mostly dramatic, but I do love it, yes. So as the taxi drew me across the streets of the old and new, I keep on asking it to take left turns, the right turns, backs and new turns, because nothing has changed, but my memory is not the same. That rhymed. And the taxi man was actually rather polite. He did not get irritated by my undecisiveness, I would say. Or maybe I'm just paying him enough and he's like, all right, whatever, bitch, I'm just going to charge you for the amount that you cost me. And so we just go on. It's like on a road trip with my late husband. But the problem is, he just did not exist. Now, finally, after a little pondering, wandering, we reach the old little house that I remember. Its huge windows, which open like French doors, the slight broken tiles on the roof, the pigeon's nest in the drainage pipe, and the lush pansies in the garden. How can I even imagine things like this? I'm so proud of my... I have never been able to quite understand the pansies. As a child, I used to keep on trampling them. And then, you know, my dog is like looking at me right now and he's like whining. I just took him out for a walk because he was whining and hooting. And most probably he's missing my mom, and his sad face makes me sad too. So I do not know what to do anymore. Anyway, so yeah, pansies. So I used to keep on trampling these pansies in the garden as a child. I mean, who needs that much color in their life? But something's wrong with them. They just start to come out like a weed, and now it's been years, it's been seasons, they just don't die, they just stay there, keep on blooming. And all I can think is how futile most of the people in the world are to call people pansies with the thought that they are soft and easily trampled, whereas these idiotic creatures in my garden just don't fucking die. I keep on looking at the pansies and just go into this trance of my childhood and how fun it would have been without those little pansies around. I am knocked out of my trance by the taxi driver, as he says that, like, he does not say anything. He just looks at me, and there's a way that a polite person looks at you that somebody like me just knows that you are being looked at. And I just come out of it and I start to slowly gather my things from within my reach and come out, as he also walks out of his door back to the boot of the car and opens it and very gently takes out the baggages. I was gonna make the cab driver an asshole and throw her baggages on the sidewalk, but then I was like, no. So yeah, so he's very nice. And so the last baggage is actually a little hat that I owned. And as I was taking that, he put his little hands on my hands. It was a nice gesture of filiality, to say the least. I gather all my things and place them in the increment of heights on the sidewalk right in front of my house. And I slowly and gradually start taking steps towards it. I feel like I take one step per minute. But why do I need to be fast? I'm just taking each step and absorbing the things that has happened here. Just feeling in it and not being sure that I do not let myself go today again. I look to my right, it's Stacy's big tree. It has grown bigger since the time I was before. I wouldn't say bigger, it's like tall, but getting slimmer, but taller than before. It's like a teenager hitting its growth spurt. But maybe that is why the treehouse on it no longer exists. I remember the gigglings, the laughings, the idiotic candy wrappers which we used to throw all over and all around it, and how her mother used to just rampage on our heads about simple cleanliness and etiquette. I really could not understand the obsession of adults with simple cleanliness. Like, you aren't clean. You are not clean right now. The only cleanliness which comes is from education, and nobody in this build is educated. So, but I don't get to be bitter about it anymore because I've grown out of it. I am sure that they have also grown out of it. If they haven't, then well, it's their loss. I feel sad for them, but that's the extent which I'll go down to. I just carry my bags as I slowly and gradually make my way to the porch. I actually got a call from somebody and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to pick that up right now. So, yeah. So, it's porch. Okay, she's at the porch. She slowly gets to the porch and let's give her black dress, you know, that mafia morning black dressing thingy, lace one piece. Yeah, so my black dress just touches the stair below me. I do not know, I wore it for confidence and to feel better than everybody else, but it just makes me feel as I was when I was 5, alone and sad. I put my bags down and ring the bell, and I wait. And I hear somebody staring at me from behind too. I turn around to look over my shoulders and I see this little cute girl wearing pink. She feels like me despite the black quality frock that she's wearing and the fact that she has two plaits, which I would never do even as a child. But she looks at me, she waves the little rag doll in her hand like, hello, I see you. I wave back. She throws the rag doll where she was standing and goes on to run away. I do not know what took over my legs, but I decided to go towards where she was standing. And as I went there, and I saw that the girl was nowhere to be found. There was no turns or corners where she could have moved to. Maybe she ran into somebody's house. If she's a neighbor, it would be easier because that way I'll be able to give her the rag doll as time permits. I pick the doll up, I turn back almost mechanically, and I go back this time to walking a little faster such that the tip tap and clank clank of my bag and my shoes and my bag is slightly audible if somebody wants to pay attention. I walk and I ring the bell again. Nothing really happens. I see the time on my watch and it just keeps on going infinitesimally. Like, its purpose is to keep on moving. And why does it move? Because we ask it to. How futile does life like that becomes? Our life goes with it and it goes with ours because once we end, the time is no more too. But my teacher used to tell me time is money, and I rang the doorbell again. I think my mom's not home, so I just shift the 7th pot to my right and voila, here are the keys. Exactly where I left them 15 years ago when I thought I might be coming back. Well, I did, just some bitter texts later. Well, here I am and I open the door. The house isn't as I remember it is. It used to be normal. It used to have more wood than dolls now. There are dolls everywhere, as I hoped there would be books once. On each wall, my mother has apparently decided to mount a niche with a sliding glass door, which makes it look like a beautiful little museum. The dolls are all of all sizes, as I enter and realize. Even the tiling she has made into a very beautiful pink and light blue color. The dolls range in sizes and material. I see some rag dolls like the girl who lived it. I see some porcelain ones. I see some made out of plastic. I see others which are naked. Ooh, we have naked dolls apparently. And I see others which are not so naked apparently. I never knew she was a doll person. She never really gave me any dolls to play with. I look at her doll collection. Each doll very specifically placed. It's actually beautiful how much effort she's put into it. I see some of them get their own bits of flowers and roses, while there are some others which are simply placed on the cold hard floor. The ones who were placed on the cold hard floor actually wear black and have burnet hair like mine. So, well, talks a lot about her parenting style. I keep on walking around and I keep on saying, "Mom," and there's really no response from anywhere. I walk around to the kitchen and to my surprise, there are no dolls in the kitchen apparently, but there also seems to be little food in there. Maybe the dolls ate them all. From the kitchen, I went to the living room and back into the corridor. All I could see was dolls, the neat hardwood floor, a little carpeting here and there, and dolls. And the one in my hand actually felt at home right now. Maybe this was something nice. I think that the girl might have borrowed it from my mother and would have wanted to return it in her own weird, crooked manner. Well, she did a good job. I'll most probably be taking over this doll estate once my mom's no more. Or if she does not name the doll estate to one of the other dolls, then I need to fight a custody battle against some millionaire, billionaire dolls, which are maybe run by some puppet or even better, possessed by some demon. But that's wishful thinking. I circle around the first floor and come where I started at, right in the front of the main door. What did I say? First floor. Ground floor. She circled around the ground floor. And I'm not sure what I said because I do not know what I've written anymore. So, yeah. As she does that, she comes around there. Okay. And I grab the handle of the stair. It is still as rickety as it was like 500 years ago. And I slowly place my foot on the first step, the second thump, third thump. As I walk up, I see this sharp turn where Mom used to build the mattress. What is that thing called? Mattress slide? Mattress roller coaster? Yes, the mattress roller coaster. They were trending back in the day, you know, and they were actually very quite enjoyable. As I turned, I saw the entrance to the first floor had been completely blocked by another room filled with dolls. This one was actually more beautiful than the rest of the arrangement because here, all the rooms and the doors were, instead of the doors, there were these cabinets with perfect fit to the ceiling, filled with all these pretty little dolls. In the center, there was a human-sized table, which was blue in color, and along with it were white satin chairs. On those chairs sat other dolls, which were quite large in size, not the kind of dolls one would like their five-year-old child to play, because you wouldn't know if it's a doll playing with the child or the child playing with the doll. And they just are having tea with air, it seems. Well, my mother always was interesting, I can say. Interesting enough to have 105 of boyfriends all trying to talk more into me than her. Well, yet again, that's past. I'm past that, ain't I? I go back down and I know there's only one place where she can be, if not upstairs, that's the basement. I know that she did dread the basement. She felt that that's where she's gonna die always. And that is something which has even creeped onto in my mind. As I stand in front of the basement stairs, I feel the hand of Robert caressing through my thigh and it sends shudders down my spine. Maybe the only reason she was afraid of the basement was because she knew what was happening in there and she did not want to do anything with it. Nevertheless, it was her own child that it was being done to. I push the door open. The little lock on it apparently does not work well. Good for me. I wouldn't know the keys to it. Well, talking about keys, I just realized why the keys were not moved in last, how many, 15 years now. Like, she is an avid gardener, and I do not think that she would have not moved a pot of her favorite pink pansies to a little bit of sun whenever it was a little too gloomy in her life and everywhere else. Dogs have started to bark, and I'm not going to stop because it kind of works as a fun. Okay. Well, apparently I had to stop recording because my dog started to bark, and when he starts barking, like, his voice is somehow louder than mine, and I'm literally speaking as loud as I possibly can right now. And no, that was a lot of effort. That's not how loud I normally try to speak. But yeah, I don't know. Like, he barks 7 kilometers away and my laptop decides to pick his voice better. I'm like, yo, bitch, I'm the bitch you need to listen to. Not that dog. Get alive. Ooh, talking about my laptop, you know, it fell down the other day and I'm so sad. My soul did not shatter, but I did get really scared. And like, if anybody of you wants to gift me a laptop, please just go ahead and do that. I wouldn't mind that. I can send you my address too for it. You can send death threats along with the laptop. But yeah, send the laptop anyway. Where was I? I remember. Okay, the basement door. So at the basement door, I just nudged it a little. Oh, we were at the keys. Wait. So her mother did not change the keys. How weird is that? Like, she expected her daughter to come one day or the other. Can you hear my dog whine? Oh my God. He's so attention seeking. Now he wants to open the door. Wait. Okay, yeah, the attention seeking dog has now decided to sleep properly for once in the entire day. And okay, so keys. Her mother expected her to come back once upon a time. And now they're police sirens. What the fuck? Well, it's a true crime podcast. Everything works because it just sounds... not true crime, it's paranormal. Everything works because it's a paranormal. So she opens the door, and as I start to walk in, the steps to the basement has actually been changed to this fine granite, which has a better quality than the one in the kitchen, apparently. Well, I did not ever imagine her to renovate the basement out of everything, but well, she did what she did. As I was walking, the walls to the basement were also filled with dolls, but these dolls were interesting looking, to say the least. Their eyes seemed to be moving on their own. Some of them had different colored eyes. It felt like as if my mother was creating them herself. I call out her name because I hear some rustling, bustling, munching sounds from under me. And as I walk down, I see this little pile of moving dolls. I go towards it and I just shake and I touch it. As I touch it, one of the dolls suddenly grabs my hand. And I do not know what to do. I'm just frozen. I'm not frozen because the doll frightened me. I'm frozen because there lies my mother, her bones, her face, her flesh, all put separately as the dolls slowly and gradually munch on her. Okay, so that was the story. You know, I think I need to improve a little bit in terms of my impromptu storytelling skills. So I was first gonna read like the proper one. This was another impromptu episode. Last three have been impromptu because I like how mentally stimulating it is. I'm not sure about how you guys find it because I don't care. But I think I am doing a good job at it. So thank you so much. Anyway, so off to the story of Annabelle. So there were two nursing students. One of them was called Donna, and Donna got Annabelle, or a simple Raggedy Ann doll, from her mother in 1970. The mother bought home a used doll from the hobby store, and Donna was a college student at the time who was living with a roommate called Angie. And first question, why would a mother bring in a college-going child who's studying nursing with a roommate a doll? But, well, what do I know? I'm a kid. She decided to do that, and, like, the kids accepted it and kept it in the apartment. I was like, yeah, that's just weird, especially in the 70s. It was a wild time, not doll times. I mean, sex doll times, but not normal doll times. But over time, like, initially they were like, oh my God, such a cute doll. Then over time, they noticed that Annabelle started to move around on her own. At first, it was like really subtle that if they left her on a chair, she would lie down on a chair, like if in the sitting position to a lie down position. And like different things such as, you know, just that simple movement. But slowly and gradually, the movement increased and the speed of it also increased. Within a few weeks, it became extremely mobile. Like it used to find them on different rooms, at beds, on the couch, at different chairs, like, you know, all over the place. So they also had a friend, Lou, who was, I believe, the fiance to Donna. Like he was fiance to either one of those women. And he thought that the doll was something wrong, that there was something like majorly wrong with it, something evil. But the girls were, and I quote, modern women in the 1970, and they didn't believe such a thing existed. And they thought that they must, like, my dog is licking me, yay, cute, he's so nice when I'm the only one at home, otherwise he does not even like to see my face, such an asshole. So Lou was like, oh my god, this is something wrong, get rid of it. But the two girls were like, you know, nothing, my mother gifted it to me, I cannot get rid of it. But soon Animal's actions got even weirder, and like they start finding notes written on parchment paper in the house with messages written on it, such as help us or help Lou. And this thing was like weird, and the handwriting was, I believe, a child's handwriting. Okay, so just to make things all the more creepier, the crayon colory thingy which was used to write it was like nowhere in the house, and nobody in the house also used parchment paper. So they were like, what the rabbit? Where is this coming from? And, you know, I was going to do this voice modulation, but somebody reached out to me and told me that this is kind of distracting, so please don't do it. And I'm trying to, like, control my horses right now. Anyway, the escalation continued in a form that one night when Donna returned home from work, she found Annabelle in her bed with blood on her hands. Like, blood, some sort of red liquid, and it was coming out of her hands, from her, you know, hands of a doll, like from within her. And either it was this, and there was another thing which said that one morning when the nurses were eating by their breakfast nook, Annabelle's two flimsy little cloth arms levitated onto the table. This is according to the person who has the ownership, if not the, who is the main person after Ed and Lorraine died. He's called Sepra. I should have looked up his whole name, but all the articles were like, Sepra says. So Sepra said this, and when they saw this, they were like, oh my goodness. And they were oddly fascinated by the doll. So they decided that this means that the doll wanted to communicate with them. Either it was the red liquid or its arms on, like, automatically coming on the table as if wishing to eat. So they decided to call a psychic for advice. The medium took no time to come to the nurse's aid and held a seance. When they held a seance, the psychic said that she sensed a spirit of a young girl, maybe 6 or 7 years old, and that this girl was killed outside the apartment complex in a car accident, and her name was Annabelle. I got goosebumps when I said that. Okay, interesting. Oh my god, my goosebumps are like running across my body. And that Annabelle is in that doll. And so she also said that when this, what do you call, the girl, Annabelle was found, like, 1A, like, this is one of the theories. The second theory was when the medium told her that this girl, and according to this article, it was Annabelle Higgins, was found dead in a field nearby. Not nearby, where the property was built, like a field thousands and hundreds of years ago, or whatever. And her spirit remained there. And in either of those two situations, when the doll came into the house, the little girl latched onto it because she found Donna and Angie trustworthy. And she just wanted to stay with them to be safe, because they were like motherly, parental figure thingies. So they were like, according to the article, being sweet, nurturing types. They were both nursing students. So according to them, all nurses are sweet. I am sure they have never met the nurse at my old school. So that happened, and they agreed to let Annabelle stay with them, and they gave her consent to be with them. And they liked her so much that they also gave her a bracelet, which the doll till date wears, I believe, in its, I think, right arm. And once they did this, all hell broke loose. Some people think this was their invitation to the spirit or whatever that was living in Annabelle. Lou started to have crazy bad dreams. Dreams where Annabelle was in his bed, climbing up his leg as he lay frozen, sliding up his chest to his neck, closing her stuffed hands around her throat, choking him out. And then he would wake up terrified because, yeah, and he would have a head pounding, like blood had been cut off to his brain. He was like totally red and he was like super duper freaked out. And a few days later, he and Angie were hanging out. I believe he was Angie's fiance and planning a road trip. And when they heard somebody move around in Donna's room, they froze and they thought that it was a break-in or some thief. As they crept to the door, they heard rustling sounds within, and he threw open the door and everything was exactly as it should be. But Annabelle was on the bed, was off the bed and sitting on a corner. He approached the doll and Lou was like really angry. And as he came near it, he just spun around and nobody was there. But then suddenly he had a sudden pain on his chest and he looked in his t-shirt and saw a series of raking claw marks, 9 according to this article, and rough ditches in his flesh that he had, that were burned in, like, you know, like, shank. And according to, again, this specific article, like a lot of specific articles, the weird claw marks in this situation begin to heal almost immediately. And they were gone in 2 days. Like, there were no wounds ever before. Like, the both the nursing girls were like, oh my God, what? So, yeah, now either this happened to Lou, or the second story that happened to Lou was that he woke up, he was startled and he was sweaty. And one of the nurses asked him what happened, like he was having nightmares. Like in this case, it is his first nightmare according to this account. And he says, I just had the craziest nightmare. I had a dream that the doll there was crawling up my leg and got to my neck and I was trying, and it was trying to strangle me. So he got like really panicky and like flustered, angered by this. And he went to the doll and picked it up and threw it across the apartment floor. He did that and he shouted that this is nothing more than a Raggedy Ann doll. She cannot hurt anybody. And as soon as he did that, people say that he provoked some demonic presence. And it caused 7 psychic wounds to appear on his body, 4 slash marks on his chest, 3 on his stomach. And according to, like, in this case, his wounds were, like, you know, claw marks and had scalpel, like, very sharp incisions on his flesh. And, like, this was indicative that something weird as fuck was happening. So whatever happened, the guy got bunked, like, got, like, bullied. Not bullied, what is the word? Sacked. Something, like, some slang like that. So they turned to an Episcopalian priest who later gave them the numbers of Ed and Lorraine. I just realized I was hitting this and it must have gone through the whole thing, and I'm sorry for that. So as soon as that happened, the Warrens came and they came to the conclusion that there's no ghost in this case. It was an inhuman spirit, a demon that has attached itself to the doll. But they warned that the doll wasn't possessed. Demons don't possess things, that they only possess people, which is kind of weird because the debug box, but the debug was sealed in there. And there's a chance that maybe somebody sealed the doll in it, like a voodoo ritual gone wrong or something. I do not know. And anyway, so the demon was clinging to the doll and manipulating it, and it was because it was maybe given the permission to do it, and this also helped it create like the impression of a haunting. And the target in reality was Donna's soul, who so graciously accepted it as a child to live with them. So they invited over a priest and he performed an exorcism on the apartment, and the Warrens took possession of the doll. They put it in a bag and began to drive back home. So, like, they were like, all right, this demon thing spirit is extremely powerful, so we need to be really, you know, cautious about how we are going. So they decided to stay off the highways because they were like, what if the demon fucks up the car? And at 65 miles per hour, they would surely die. So as they did it, they drew on the back roads. The engine kept on cutting off. And according to something that I read, they were driving in reverse the entire time for some weird reason. But I think that's just wrong and I read something stupid because I've not written it in my notes. But anyway, the engine kept on cutting off, the power steering kept on failing, the brakes kept on not braking. And what Ed did was he opened the bag up, he sprinkled holy water on the doll, or he placed the doll with a lot of holy water. So when this happened, and I have a commentary on holy water actually, that holy water is kind of like, you know, I was very skeptical. I was like, demons, Christians, oh my God, no. But then I was like, yeah, there's like moon water and stuff that I make and I cannot be like judgy of people about everything. So I'm not trying to be judgy. I'm just telling you, I was judging them. I'm still judging them, but I'm not going to say that I'm judging them for being so Christian. Anyway, Ed left the doll to his desk when they came home finally. And I was like, who leaves a haunted fucking doll on their like table just like that to hang around? But they did it and it began to levitate. This happened a couple of times and it seemed to just like stay there, fly, then go back. Like it had nothing else better to do. But in a couple of weeks, Annabelle was back to her old tricks. She started appearing in different rooms in their house. And they were like, okay, wow. So they sensed that the doll might be ramping back up. They asked a Catholic priest to come and exorcise the doll. Now I'm like, doesn't exorcism supposed to happen when something's possessed? And since the demon cannot possess something inanimate, why do you need to do a possession thing? But your entire house is full of possessed stuff, like Ed and Lauren Museum. You must have heard of it. So why don't you get everything exorcised if everything is that easy? And if exorcisms do not work in the manner that you want, that you need to keep them around and call them haunted objects in spite of the exorcism, then it's not an exorcism. It's just a simple sealing slash banishing, you know, like a boxing ritual wherein you contain it till it outgrows your container. But yeah, so some logical questions I had. So anyway, they asked the priest to come. The priest came in and he did not take it seriously, and he went on to tell Annabelle that you are just a doll, you cannot hurt anyone. And on his way home, his brakes failed and his car was in a very, very horrible accident, and he survived. But there was another one wherein the priest actually got scared by the doll because it said something to it, and it said that you're very weak and the God is the most powerful thing. And when he went back home, he was in an accident with a tractor. Like, accounts on the entire story vary a lot. There are at least three different interpretations to the same result, like a Lou guy getting scratches. So there are like seven different people who are going to say seven different things about it. So I took up the most frequent ones and the ones which were said by the main guy at Conjuring, but he's old, so who knows about his memory anymore. So, when this happened, they built a locked case for Annabelle, which is mostly wood. Just have a glass thing to look at the doll. And I was like, weird. And the weirdest thing is that they have placed the devil tarot card in front of it. I'm like, I really don't understand how that helps anybody in this case. So, until date, at the Ed and Lauren Museum, there are constant exorcisms, like ritual happening there. Prayers, masses, according to one article, they hold masses every day, and like they do a lot of religious stuff to be sure that the doll is like people are safe from the doll. So even when the film producers for the Annabelle decided to come visit and not really take care into account anything that happened in reality, they still decided to live with the Ed, Lauren, and Warren. I believe Ed had died by that time. I'm so sorry. I'm being weird. So they, like, when the film producer crew came in, they said the doll kept on moving in its box and it nodded to some people. And like, oh my God, cute. So there was also a rumor that she escaped in August 2020 and Warner Brothers make a small YouTube video of it, of what Annabelle is doing in the pandemic. And it was absolutely adorable because everybody is really doing what Annabelle is doing in the pandemic. And that's not Annabelle. Somehow, there was other things. Like, I actually went through a couple videos and articles. They were like, so this is the original story. Rest of the stories basically revolve around people who visit the doll and then die. But I was not able to find any such stories. I was able to find just one. And this specific one which I'm going to talk about was the one which everybody covered. And I was like, yeah, maybe there's just one and everybody thinks there are a lot more, but there's none if you try to actually research on it. So this was that somebody died in a motorcycle crash when they tried to touch Annabelle. Anyway, even when the film producers were there, the actress who played Lauren Warren in the movie had also been there. One second. Okay, I got a text from somebody. Not important right now. And what was I saying? They got what? Yes, I forgot. Yeah, so the actress who played her also stayed with her in her living room in the house to actually get into her essence. And the film people were not allowed to touch or handle the doll, because touching or handling the doll can interfere with somebody's aura, a human being's or otherwise's aura. And the evil force within the doll will cause great harm to people. And there's also this little thing of do not open the case in the thing. And okay, so I do not judge, as I said before, at all. But they also say that most unwanted spirit enter people through Ouija boards, tarot cards and psychics. And then this slap a tarot card on the most haunted thing in the world, but interesting. And I was like, okay, weird, but like, aren't you a psychic yourself? What? But then the present owner said that everyone in the audience who believes in God, in one of his interviews, must believe there's a devil and ghosts, devils, demons are real. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure, but still. And the article that I took this from, they did not spell everyone correctly. They spelled it with two E's. It was E-E-V-E-R-Y-O-N-E. And I was like, okay, interesting. So, yes, that's it. That's it for the first season. And Annabelle! That's it. Anyway, the podcast is hosted by Koi On Air. It is co-produced with Nifix. The music is by Lil Addy. And this was the end of the first season. It ended on 27 episodes. It's beautiful because it's 9 into 3. And 9 is... it's like 3 is cube and it's 3-3. So it's some kind of synchronicity. And that helped me feel better about myself. If you want to hear me ramble more, you can... ooh. Oh, fuck. You know what? I'm going to give the credits right now. So basically, we approached Good Pods to do a proper thing for us, like, you know, promote us on their application. And they did it so graciously. And at that time, I had the coronavirus and my college exams started, which are happening right now too. That's why I was not able to record this episode properly and on time. And I was like, oh, God. My laptop is burning up too, so that's fun. And yes, so thank you so much for Good Pods for doing a feature of a podcast on an amazing app. Guys, please go listen, download it first and listen to podcasts. They have like cool community features happening. Okay, someone was at the door and I did not cut out the bell part because I want you guys to know that I have a life and I live too. So yeah, that's it for the good pods thing. It's not it actually. I feel so bad that I have not given them proper adequate covering. But second season will bring us more hope and hopefully a better memory for me. But if I have better memory, why would it be called In the Memory of the Goldfish? And collaboration episodes coming up, guys. So be tuned for that. And the podcast is... okay, I've already done that. You can reach out to me on Instagram as Koi On Air, Twitter as Koi On Air, Clubhouse as Koi On Air too. And I'll see you later, biatches. I shouldn't call biatches because it's like politically incorrect, but who cares? I'm not... like, this is the end. Nobody's like listening anymore. I am going. Bye. See you in the first week of August, actually.